This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy, and welcome to the Illinois Wesleyan University Shirk Center and the Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo. As part of this year's expo, GLT, the Ecology Action Center, and IWU are partnering to bring you this climate change roundtable. The effects of climate change have the potential to affect all aspects of our lives: agriculture, water supply, weather patterns, biological diversity, coastal communities, and the global economy. During this edition of Sound Ideas, we'll explore some of the effects and some of what individuals can do to counter climate change. The solutions have to be as broad and as far-reaching as the effects. Joining us for this on-location edition of Sound Ideas are five guests. Dr. Jim Agel is the state climatologist. His broad interest in all things related to weather and climate includes droughts, floods, winter storms, heat waves, and tornadoes, or what most of us call a typical weather week in Illinois. Jen Walling is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. She lobbies on behalf of the IEC's nearly 70 member organizations on a wide range of issues. Founded in 1975, the IEC works to ensure a more healthful environment for Illinois residents. Dr. William Rao is a professor emeritus of industrial sociology at Illinois State University. His longstanding interest in energy and industry drives his continued involvement with Vision 2020 in Bloomington Normal, part of the Transitions Initiative, an international movement preparing for the impacts of climate change and peak oil. Rick Knight is with the Citizens Climate Lobby. He has a 40-year career as a chemist and a chemical engineer. The Citizens Climate Lobby is lobbying for legislation creating a fee on fossil fuels and a resulting dividend to homeowners. Kirsten Sheets is an energy solutions implementer with Rural Mechanical Services in Peoria. Her role in the Energy Services Division at Rural is to identify and move energy-efficient projects forward. Thanks to everyone for joining us on Sound Ideas and joining us live here at Illinois Wesleyan's Shirk Center. We appreciate it. Jim Agel, let's start with you. Set the stage for us. What are some important changes you're seeing in the Illinois climate?
All right. Well, if you look at Illinois in particular, we've seen several changes over the last couple of decades, and probably the ones that really stand out are the fact that we are getting warmer. We look at the historical records in Illinois, and we've warmed it over the century about a degree or so. But if you look at it since the 1970s, we've actually warmed up by about 4 degrees. Fahrenheit, and a lot of that change has happened in the wintertime, as well as the fall and spring. Summer, not so much. We haven't seen as much change in the summer, but definitely in the other seasons. And to illustrate how that much that change has affected us, you know, 2 years ago we had a very cold winter, cold and snowy, and we thought that was kind of the end of the world, that was one of the worst winters ever. Turns out that would have been an average winter in the 1970s. It's just that we've gotten used to mild winters like this one, and so we're just more comfortable or more used to those kinds of conditions without even knowing that the climate has changed. So we've seen changes in the temperatures that have played out, and those are expected to continue into the future. If you look at the mid-century scenarios for Illinois, we're expected to warm up by about another 4 degrees or more across the state. And you say, okay, well, 4 degrees doesn't sound like that much, but you think about it, this winter was 4 degrees warmer than average, so that gives you one sense of what 4 degrees plays out to be. And in 2012, we had the warmest year on record. That was about 4 degrees warmer than the long-term average. So 2012, hot, dry year, lots of days when the 90s and 100 degree mark. So a little bit of a change in the average temperature can actually give you big changes in the extremes. So that's one takeaway for today. The other one that we see a lot of problems with in Illinois is increases in precipitation. The trends in Illinois, we've increased overall precipitation by about 10 to 15% over the last century. And those are expected to continue in the near term anyway. And it also translates into more heavy rainfall events. So we're seeing a lot more days with 2, 4, 6 inches of rain over very large areas. So as a result, we're seeing a lot of issues with flooding, not only in farm fields, which is very evident in McLean County, even this spring, but we also see a lot of urban flooding. So we look at, in fact, we just did a report last summer looking at urban flooding and in-town flooding, so to speak. And we've seen big increases in those as well. And it's very problematic. In fact, if you start adding up the dollar amounts, it can be add up to quite a bit. We had some events that have been in the hundreds of millions of dollars in damages, and a few that have been over $1 billion in damages from the flooding.
So a warmer winter doesn't necessarily mean a drier winter.
That's right, exactly. So this is a classic case of what it might look like in the future is that, you know, back in December when we had all that rain, that was really more like a springtime storm. That wasn't a winter storm that you typically see after Christmas. That was more of a springtime storm with lots of precipitation, lots of rain over a very large area. So those are the kind of things we have to think about. So, you know, at one point I talk about these trends of slow changes over time, but it's really the extremes that are going to have the biggest impact on us right now and in the future.
Jim, when you talk with people about climate, do most have a pretty good idea about the differences between weather and climate? And do they understand climate change, accept or reject the role humans have in affecting the climate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I get asked that a lot about the difference between weather and climate. So weather, I kind of consider that kind of the, you know, what's happening right now, what's going to happen in the next couple of days, whereas the climate is kind of the longer view of the situation. So basically weather is you know, what's happening right now, but if you watch that over time and look at the patterns and so forth, that becomes our climate. So, you know, that thunderstorm today becomes part of the annual total for the year and so forth, and eventually becomes part of our climate. So there are very closely related. In fact, if you want to see a good argument, is to get a bunch of climatologists and meteorologists in a room and have them define climate and weather, because they got all kinds of ideas how that plays out. Now, where it gets confusing is sometimes people look at a weather event and use that as proof against climate change. So, example right now is, you know, this weekend it's fairly cold, we saw some snow flurries. So did that disprove climate warming or global warming? No, it was just a short-term event, and we've already come off the 10th warmest March on record. So when you look at the big picture, this weekend is a pretty short-term event.
Dr. Bill Rao wanted to make a point.
Jim, I read somewhere that Chicago is no longer planting white oaks or planting swamp oaks and other southern oaks because a white oak will no longer survive in Illinois at the end of the century. Is that correct, and do we need to change our state tree?
Well, it's a good question. If you look at trees in particular, you know, they have a very long lifespan, so you really have to think far ahead. You know, if you're just planting flowers in your yard, you just really have to worry about this season. But especially at the municipal level, they got to plan far ahead, and they are introducing more southern species in the Chicago area and elsewhere to kind of take into account the fact that we're going to be warmer by mid-century. I'm not really a tree expert, so I don't know if it's going to really push the white out totally out of Illinois, but we'll probably see some more southern species being planted in many of these places.
Bill, what's your understanding with the trees? Is it that the winters are too cold or the summers are too warm or there's too many swings?
I don't know, but the weather would change so that Illinois would be closer to Louisiana than where it is now. Mm. And that as a result, we would be out of the historical white oak tree range.
Jen Walling with the Illinois Environmental Council, the IEC, held a lobby day in Springfield on Thursday. What did you talk with lawmakers about as it concerns climate change, and what did you hear back?
Sure. So we covered a range of environmental issues, but obviously climate is the top issue. And we've been working, almost for 2 years now on the Illinois Clean Jobs Bill. And at this point, we're actually going around over half of the Illinois General Assembly sponsors this bill. And so a lot of it was saying thank you and staying strong. I think that at some point in the next year or so, there will be energy legislation that comes out of Springfield, and we're only going to support energy legislation that prioritizes solutions to climate change, so renewable energy, energy efficiency, and a carbon framework. And if that's not in some package that passes, we're going to be working very hard to oppose it. So that was the top line message. We're also working, obviously the budget issue is overshadowing energy and a lot of other issues, and we're working to protect what current funding there is for renewable energy, the Renewable Energy Resources Fund, some low-income energy efficiency assistance, and just making sure that that ends up in a final budget. And then final issue, we worked a lot on what role environmental justice can have in advising the IEPA and the governor on anything that happens with climate change in the Clean Power Plan.
And we'll get to the Illinois Clean Jobs bill, and we'll talk about how the budget stalemate is affecting environmental legislation in just a bit. Dr. William Rao again has another comment.
If I could just ask Jen a question. It's my understanding that nearly all of the Clean Jobs bill is outside the realm of general revenues. It doesn't require any general revenues. Is that correct, Jen?
That's true, that anything that we want to do with clean energy is not going to be going in, it's not related to taking money out of the general revenue fund. It's self-funding out of fees that might come off of utility bills and ratepayers, and also savings that customers receive. I mean, our bill is projected to save, you know, $1.6 billion to consumers. And so, yes, it doesn't come out of the general revenue fund.
It shouldn't be a hostage of the budget standoff.
If anyone sees climate change as a political issue on a day-to-day basis, it's you. How did we get to this point where science has been politicized? And do you run into climate change deniers at the statehouse level?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, climate change has become a very partisan issue, and I'm often asked, you know, and definitely on the Republican side, there are some supporters who want to do something about climate change, but very few, and it's definitely partisan. And I'm always asked, what do we do to get Republicans interested in believing in climate change? And my response is always, well, actually, we don't talk about climate change. When we want to get Republicans, and our bill is bipartisan, we talk about the economy, we talk about clean energy jobs, we talk about energy efficiency savings, we talk about how this is really a great economic plan, and we need to bring these, this is coming, and the clean energy economy is coming, and we need to make sure that it's coming to Illinois.
Well, surely they see through that, though. I mean, you're talking about the economy, but is your main goal to boost the economy or to slow the effects of climate change?
Well, of course, our main goal is to slow the effects of climate change, but we've really developed a lot of other messengers that are able to say this much better than we are. I mean, there are, you know, so many wind turbines in Illinois from our renewable portfolio standards. When it comes to the Senate, almost all but one of the senators that represent wind are Republicans. And that's really brought those folks along because it's been property taxes, it's been economic generation for their district. So we're not, you know, we can deliver that message about jobs and economic benefits, but now we have businesses that can bring it. And in some instances, especially with energy efficiency, the utilities are often bringing that message with us. I mean, you know, one of the things that's illustrative of that is right now, you know, we have a bill, Clean Jobs Bill. There's also a bill from Exelon, and there's a bill from ComEd. Well, the Exelon bill is about low carbon portfolio standards, and the ComEd bill is mostly about energy efficiency. So we have really changed this debate that all of the energy proposals that are out there on the table are things that theoretically would reduce climate change. I mean, there's ones we support more than others, but these big companies are talking about climate change, and that's what the debate is centered around. So I think we've done a great job there.
So really what you're doing in some part is giving some politicians some political cover.
Absolutely.
Rick Knight with the Citizens Climate Lobby, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to comment, also follow up on what Jen said, because wrestling with the partisanship around climate change is something that Citizens Climate Lobby really focuses on, because we are advocating for a national policy that requires congressional action. And we all know how the Congress is currently supported. Currently, the majority is Republicans, and so we have to find ways to appeal to Republicans, and we try to do that by emphasizing the fact that a carbon tax with all of the money rebated as a dividend to households is a market-based solution. It does not allow the government to make decisions about how these energy solutions and climate solutions are developed, but it puts that into the entire economy, covers all sectors and all forms of energy. And so we believe that we have made some headway in appealing to Republicans in that way.
And we will get into the details of how the fee and dividend system works in a little bit. Dr. Rao?
Yes. One of the things that might give us leverage is that in December, the United States Congress passed five-year extenders for the investment tax credit and the production tax credit, the latter for wind. So there are literally billions of dollars sitting on the table that are going to be invested in wind and solar across the country. And with our messed up policy situation in Illinois, we could lose billions of dollars if they don't straighten this out. So this is an issue that should appeal to anyone who has a business head and wants to make investments, attract investments to the state.
And anyone else on the roundtable today have an opinion about how to, you know, have a conversation about climate change with somebody who maybe doesn't believe it? Kirsten Sheets?
Sure. I'm sitting on here as the energy efficiency person, right? So how do we make renewables work and how do we make the economy work? Energy efficiency is by far the fastest and the cheapest implementation of a clean economy and a clean environment. So certainly we need to incorporate, when we're just talking about clean jobs, people immediately think about renewables and how important that is to the entire system. But energy efficiency is in there as well, because that makes renewables work better in the long term. It's one of the fastest growing economies in our nation so far, so it's something that definitely has to be included.
Back to Jen Walling with the IEC.
Just to emphasize that point on jobs, the Clean Energy Trust has done a study of jobs in Illinois, and at this point we are at over 110,000 clean energy jobs. And to underline Kirsten's point there, over two-thirds of those jobs are actually from energy efficiency. We think that they might, you know, you see solar, you see wind, you think that that might be the biggest job creator, but, you know, you're seeing over 70,000 jobs that just relates to energy efficiency. And we always use this as a talking point, that's more than the real estate and the accounting sector combined in Illinois. So this is a significant amount of jobs, significant amount of workers doing the work, and there can be even more from the policies that we propose.
And I'll give Dr. Jim Angel an opportunity to say something here if he wants to about conversations with those who maybe don't buy into the climate change argument.
Oh, yeah, so we have those conversations all the time. And sometimes you can, I mean, for some people, climate change and global warming are just, those are fighting words for some people. And so we kind of recast the issue and you know, sometimes we talk about weather trends. And really, my point on some of this is that I don't care if you want to believe those parts of it or not, but you know, there's things that we're having to deal with, like the flooding, that regardless of your viewpoints, we still have to deal with them. So there are some things we're going to have to address regardless of our political viewpoints.
Another question for everyone. A record number of more than 130 countries will sign the landmark Paris Agreement to tackle climate change at a ceremony at the UN headquarters this Earth Day. The agreement sets a goal to keep global warming below 2 degrees Celsius and requires countries to submit a climate action plan and to update them every 5 years, though such plans are not legally binding. What are your thoughts on the Paris Accord and its true future effect on climate change? Will we see any true effect of climate change as a result of the Paris Accord? And does anyone want to jump in on this? Dr. Rao?
Mike, I think that that is a historic accomplishment. And I think it's going to move the needle very importantly. What I think is probably more important is if we look at two of the major polluters, India and China, both those countries face major insurrections among their own population because people are dying from pollution from coal-fired power plants. And both of those countries will be moving very, very rapidly to close down their coal operations. It's happening right now. And that's going to have repercussions here as well because their coal exports to India will dry up in a year or two. There will be none. They found that it's cheaper for them to build solar today than it is to rely on their old coal-fired power plants. And they've cleared away the financial problems to start closing those things down. So we could actually find ourselves behind some of the third world countries that may move more rapidly into renewables than we are. But it's really a crucial accomplishment.
Anyone want to jump in here? Kirsten Sheets?
Interestingly enough, I just listened to a podcast from the Energy Gang. It's a very popular podcast that focuses on energy efficiency and renewables, solar in particular. And that was exactly what the entire podcast was, how important it is that China is being so incredibly aggressive right now on closing their coal plants, getting rid of it, installing solar, and essentially all the infrastructure that we've built in the United States to do coal exports, those exports are going to be shutting down in the very near future because China will no longer be buying that coal.
And what's the effect of that on the U.S. economy? Can we make that up with clean energy jobs, for instance?
We better. I mean, one of the things is people think that somehow coal is a huge job creator. In Illinois, there are only 4,000 miners, direct jobs in coal. So I think what we need is a just transition fund to close down those coal mines and old coal boilers as quickly as possible and find reemployment opportunities for the people in those communities that are tied to those industries.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy at the Illinois Wesleyan University Shirk Center for the Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo Climate Change Panel Discussion. Joining me are state climatologist Jim Angel, the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council, Jen Walling, Dr. William Rao with Vision 2020, Rick Knight with the Citizens Climate Lobby, and Energy Solutions Implementer with Rural Mechanical Services, Kirsten Sheets. And let's stay with you, Kirsten. Rural is certified by the Illinois Commerce Commission to install and maintain renewable energy systems. Tell us about Rural Mechanical Services, your customers, and what they're looking for when they come to your business.
So we started out, we're primarily an HVAC service mechanical company. So a lot of my energy efficiency programs or projects come from looking at HVAC systems, both for commercial and industrial facilities, making sure they're doing heat recovery, trying to get opportunities for them to reduce their operating costs. Because for most of these companies, a lot of foreign-owned companies, they have greenhouse gas emission controls and standards, and they have standards that they're or goals that they're trying to get to, and so they hire somebody like me, a consultant, to come in and evaluate their systems and make sure that they're doing everything that they can to get their operating costs as low and their greenhouse gas emissions as low as possible. Our solar business is new, but we have an electrical department that helps us out with the industrial and commercial stuff. So we're going into commercial and residential solar installations. Again, what I said earlier still stand true. Energy efficiency makes renewable work. So it's really important that that home or that business is doing as much energy efficient operations as they can so that we can put on the right sized solar system. And so we really look at that. We evaluate that. We're explaining to the public that they have a tax credit, the federal tax credit that was mentioned earlier. And then Illinois has the SREC system. So essentially, homeowners and business owners are able to sell their renewable energy credits, and the state of Illinois will send them back a check every quarter for doing that.
So are your business customers, are they looking to meet those regulations and save money, or are they wanting to save the world, or is a little bit of both?
So the large corporations, let's just talk about Caterpillar, Komatsu, Bridgestone, they may not all be foreign-known, but they all definitely have a sustainability goal or mission. And that's been primarily, I think, public-driven. They want to look good to the public. They want to put something on their website, and they want to publish a nice sustainability report. I think it's both. You know, I think they've recognized that sustainability does mean that they save money, but I think it's also a public marketing.
So you're helping them not greenwash too, because they're actually taking action.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yes.
On a typical solar panel installation, if there is such a thing, when do customers begin to see a return on their investment?
We're seeing, generally speaking, 5 to 6 years.
And how much carbon can be abated on average by adding solar to a home?
So they can offset. So a typical home in Illinois is anywhere from 900 to 1100 kilowatt hours a year. So we can offset that by about 2/3 usually with a good sized solar system, something that's getting a 5 to 6 year payback. So it's a significant amount. Certainly the community solar movement and the residential installations are by far some of the largest offsets that we have available to us. But there's also lease programs that you can do on commercial buildings and the rooftop space on top of warehouses, for instance. I mean, there's huge amount of commercial infrastructure that's already there that we can put solar on top of and make an enormous difference.
And Dr. William Rao, wanted to add something.
I'd just like to extend one thing that Kirsten has said. One of the things we're going to really have to do if we want to win this climate war is to get homes off natural gas. And with the developments in heat pumps, we can have a fully modern home that's hyper-efficient, much, much, much more efficient than we have now, get rid of natural gas and use heat pumps for hot water, air conditioning, and heating as well. And that's the direction we need to move.
And quite frankly, I actually want to commend, I know we can't commend the state of Illinois for a whole lot lately, but we can commend them on their building codes. They have, by far, the latest and greatest state-of-the-art building codes of anywhere else in the United States. And that's the right thing to do. So that's what's going to make any new construction from this point forward better in the long run. That's what's going to get us off natural gas, get us back into a more sustainable, renewable electric home.
Kirsten, what about making sure that the facilities that are getting energy-efficient upgrades are weatherized? Make sure that there's proper weatherization, that you're not just blowing that efficient heat out the window or through cracks in the building.
Absolutely. So that's the low-hanging fruit, right? You always hear people talking about low-hanging fruit, and that absolutely is the low-hanging fruit. Anybody can go to Menards and buy a thing of caulk and a caulking gun and walk around their house for an hour and take care of huge heat loss, or heat infiltration in the summer. So it's by far, again, that just points back to my original comments and for the reason why I'm on this panel. Energy efficiency is the cheapest to implement. There's no infrastructure required for energy efficiency. It's the way to move forward. And for Illinois, for instance, this is a nice little statistic. Most of our clean power plan that we have to implement can be attained by energy efficiency. We don't necessarily need to install renewable to get us all the way there. We definitely need a mix. We don't have any one solution cures the problem. But energy efficiency for the state of Illinois will get us a long way. And the reason for that is because we're the leading state in coal-fired power plants. And if we can knock those offline and reduce the load on our existing coal-fired power plants through energy efficiency and through renewable installations, that gets us a long way to meeting the requirements of our clean power plan.
Dr. William Rao with Vision 2020, former ISU professor. Your approach on solar, community solar gardens, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, this is one of the central features in the Illinois Clean Jobs Bill. There is a provision for low-income community solar where the objective will be to build large arrays, ideally ground-mounted arrays on brownfield solar sites, that will drive the prices of solar so low that low-income folk will be able to buy in on an on-bill payment that will be noticeably less than what they're paying for electricity right now. And so, for example, here in Bloomington, we have the old landfill, 63 acres, which will be closing soon. I don't know whether that site is available, but if it is available, we're talking about 10 megawatts of community solar out in that spot, and it's a good spot for wind as well.
And how many homes are we talking about powering?
You know, I can't off the top of my head say what that is, but if you start getting 1,000 kilowatt units, that's big. And if you do 10, you're getting down to commercial scale, utility scale solar, which nationwide is going about 5 cents a kilowatt hour. We could probably get that for folks down to 7 cents or so. Kirsten, you can probably talk about this better than I can.
Well, I mean, the average home is 900 to 1,100 kilowatt hours.
Yeah.
That's the average consumption for an Illinois home. So once you start talking about 1,000 kilowatt hours, you've knocked off a home. So kind of puts it back into perspective. Yeah.
And you touched on this, the price of solar, price stabilization. Customers involved with CSGs won't see electric rates rise as steeply as other utility customers.
If you look at what's happened in Illinois, we have historically been defined as a low-cost energy state. But the utility cost escalator is increasing at about 5% a year since 2005. And this last year really jumped when Dynegy went in and scammed the capacity auction market. For the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has come out and prohibited what happened in the past, but they drove the prices way up with 30% increase in the power portion of an Ameren default bill. Well, that's a huge increase. And we're going to be literally pricing poor people out of the electricity market if this cost escalator continues at its present rate. So one of the reasons why I'm such a strong advocate for community solar is those rates are stable for 25 years. You know, you pay the upfront capital costs, and you're going to be getting your electricity for another 25 years. So it's one of the solutions to breaking this cost escalator.
And Jen Walling with the Illinois Environmental Council, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to some of what Dr. Rao said. The way that we have treated solar in Illinois has just been appalling. Just the various policies. And, for example, that's one of them that we can't do community solar generation yet. We'll need this bill to pass it. We've also failed to pass a bill. It's called PACE financing, where you pay back both efficiency and solar on your utility bills. And those are financing mechanisms that would make these things way more affordable. But we can't do those in Illinois. And further than that, I mean, I can go on and on with this list. We've had solar rebates. Actually, you pay on your utility bill for a fund that's supposed to go for solar rebates to help people install. That money's been swept into the general revenue fund for years. I think there was one little bit last year, but it didn't happen. There's a $30 million solar procurement that was passed last year that we can't do because there's no budget, so not an appropriation. And then on Tuesday, there's going to be a vote where basically before the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, the utilities are probably going to get their way and in really destroying some net metering provisions, which is basically customers getting their fair share, getting that check from the utility.
So utility companies are actively working against community solar generation.
Well, not just community solar generation. I mean, that is something, just solar in general. And we have seen, they've done a lot. It's sort of been a pattern that's built up. We didn't think there was a lot of opposition there, but when you look at this broad picture of what's happened in Illinois, not just the utilities, but just legislators in general, and you think, you know, Illinois has so much potential for solar. You think that we're not sunny, right? But we have more sun than Germany does, which has far more solar than we do, far and above.
Should
and there's
a state climatologist to confirm that.
Yes, that is true. Yes, we're much and sunnier than those guys.
There's lots of economical solar that's still on the table. And what we have done through our policies, whether it's the policies that just simply make it competitive or the policies that are meant to provide subsidies or grants, we have just really hurt that industry in Illinois, and there's so much more we can do just to forward the business climate for solar in Illinois.
And Kirsten Sheets, it looked like you wanted to say something. Kirsten Sheets with Rural Mechanical.
Yeah, just ditto. Everything you just said is spot on, and I just really wanted to focus on the decision that's coming before JCAR on Tuesday because... the Joint Commission...
Joint Committee on Administrative Rules.
Committee on Administrative Rules. Thank you. So they have this decision before them, even though the Illinois Commerce Commission has done a two-year study and provided a report saying that it's absolutely imperative that they maintain the net metering the way that it is and that the utilities need to keep with the way things are right now. They continue to lobby, and they have this decision going before JCAR saying, absolutely not, we don't want to do it, and it will absolutely 100% destroy any opportunity for community solar, rooftop leases, all those kinds of things that are available to us now, and it's completely against everything that we're trying to get through with the Clean Jobs Bill.
And the likelihood that will happen?
It's probably going, well, the JCAR is very complicated, but I would say there's a high likelihood that solar will lose from whatever decision happens on Tuesday.
And is that it, or is there a follow-up, a legislative remedy to that?
Well, I think that the rule may go in place. I think that there may need to be, the Commerce Commission may need to come back depending on what the decision is on Tuesday. There's a bunch that they could prohibit the rule from happening, in which case it's dead. They could object to the ruling, in which case it goes in place, but then they basically have to redo it. This is going to be extremely problematic. We'll probably need to undo the damage with legislation or through negotiations on this clean jobs bill, which, you know, it's not fun to have another chip of something that we felt we already had in place that we're going to have to negotiate again. And this will be an extremely, extremely problematic decision.
Dr. Rao?
Yeah, Mike, if I could just add a little historical note here. The whole energy system and transportation system in the United States is facing a wave of creative destruction, where a lot of our existing practices are going to be simply washed away. The utilities have about 5-10 years to develop new business models to accommodate this change. And instead, they're acting like slow-moving dinosaurs, and they will be facing an extinction event if they keep going down this road. They're not necessary anymore.
One of the analogies you've made is the difference between digital imaging and film. Is this the point you're trying to make?
Yeah, it's a digital image versus film. And if we look at this, one of our most remarkable iconic companies in the United States was Kodak. They were just a fixture of American life. And I think if anyone here was taking a picture of their family in the year 2000, they'd be using film camera. I'm almost certain of that. 15 years later, you can't buy film. Kodak basically went bankrupt in 12 years because their technologists warned the company that they had to move beyond film. They failed to do it, and they went bankrupt. The power merchants have to do the same thing. They have to move beyond coal, nuclear, and gas. Those sources of energy cannot compete against wind and solar.
Rick Nike with the Citizens Climate Lobby.
I would like to also make a point that unlike film cameras versus digital, the energy system is something that so permeates everything that we do and think about, and every manufactured product that, as Jim Hansen had once said, as long as fossil fuels are the cheapest form of energy, they will be burned by someone. Now, I know that all these renewables are coming down in price, but the magnitude of the transformation that we need to make requires that we somehow create a rising price on fossil carbon that has to be returned to the economy in a way that it will drive that transition to the level that we need, because we need to get to 80 or 90% CO2 reductions by the middle of this century. And the Clean Power Plan, as laudable as it is, does not get us there. We need something on a national level that is durable, cannot be canceled by a future White House, and that people will support.
I want to go back to community solar gardens for a moment. If all the rules and regulations fall into place the way you would like them to work, how does that work? Because you don't have to live in proximity to this solar garden to actually benefit from it.
Yeah. Basically, I think there would be two tracks. There would be the low-income track, where there would actually be managers appointed to organize low-income communities into buying blocks to get these community solar projects off the ground. And the Illinois Power Agency would front the upfront capital costs with the 15-year power purchase agreement, and the SRECs would be sold to the utilities. So there's a pretty good mechanism for getting this off the ground rather quickly in low-income communities. With a PACE program, Property Assessed Clean Energy, we could extend the same model to middling to upper-income folk, where they could basically take out loans to buy into a community solar project. That loan would go onto their tax bill, be part of the property taxes. It would be assigned to their property, but we could also make it portable. So if they moved to a new home, they could basically take their share of a community solar with them. Anyone can buy in, anyone from a panel up to enough power to power their house and plus their electric cars.
But none of this happens unless we get the clean
energy. We need the policy framework. We need the policy foundation.
Jim Walling, there was a point you wanted to make.
Yeah, just to echo what Dr. Rao was saying here, with some of these policies, I mean, there are subsidies that we look at for renewable energy, but with some of these policies, it's really just about financing and allowing the thing to happen. This is not about giving money to these various industries. So we have policies in place now that are really prohibiting these new financing mechanisms. They're, you know, a lot of the coal that we have in place, the nuclear we have in place, when they came onto the market, they had guaranteed long-term contracts to support their development. Renewable energy is not even starting with that fair base of being able to compete with those. So, you know, we're looking at policies that just, you know, like I said, are just, it's not a subsidy. It's just a financing mechanism that would allow these to go into place.
And what are you hearing about the Illinois Clean Jobs Bill from lawmakers? And would the governor sign it if the legislature actually takes action?
So those are great questions. So I think we talked a little bit, but the Illinois Clean Jobs Bill, HB 2607, SB 1485, is a bill that expands our renewable portfolio standards, expands our energy efficiency portfolio standards, and creates a carbon framework, a cap and invest system that protects environmental justice communities. And we have a lot of support of it. Part of it has been in our messaging. We talk about it creates or maintains on average 32,000 jobs a year. It would save consumers $1.6 billion over the life of the project, mostly from energy efficiency, but also from having renewable energy on our grid. There's a lot of support for the environmental benefits. There's a lot of support for the economic benefits. As I said, we have over half of the General Assembly as sponsors of the bill right now. Part of the issue of getting it done, though, I mean, we are, you know, even though this really has nothing to do with the budget, as we referred to earlier, this is getting wrapped up into budget discussions because there's, you know, there's very little getting done. I mean, I have other issues that we work on in Springfield that I'm going to end up abandoning just because, you know, this was committee deadline week and you saw a lot of stuff that just didn't get assigned. It didn't go through committee. So there are those problems with it. And then, you know, the utilities are going to work really hard to make sure that we don't move the Clean Jobs Bill and there are things that they want. So I think we need to discuss with them and see if there's any way to settle our differences in a way that still achieves our goal. And maybe there's some comprehensive package that's usually how stuff is done in Springfield. But of course, we're not going to sign on to anything that doesn't protect our goals there. And then with the governor's office, I mean, I think people all over would tell you it's hard to read what the governor's influences are. But I know that in his transition report, he spoke a lot about energy efficiency. He talked about fixing our renewable portfolio standards. And he talked about the business climate for renewable energy in general. So I think that there are a lot of pieces of the Clean Jobs Bill that we could get support from the governor's office. And hopefully, you know, we're working very hard on getting more bipartisan support for it, so he has that background. So I feel hopeful, but it's just a message of timing and making sure that we're taking the time that we need to get the best that we can to prioritize everything and really pass as much of this bill as is to bring those jobs, protect consumers, and protect the low-income people.
We talked about focusing on the economy as a strategy to try to work through some of these, work through legislation that actually would benefit and combat climate change. What actual effect do you expect the Illinois Clean Jobs Bill to have on the Illinois economy? Can you give us some bullet points?
Absolutely. Well, I talked a little bit about what those jobs are, you know, the 32,000 jobs created or maintained on average each year, and then the savings to consumers. I think that we've already seen a tremendous economic benefit from, you know, we passed renewable portfolio standards and energy efficiency standards in 2007. I already talked about we have over 110,000 jobs. There's been $1 billion in savings to consumers. And even things like wind, I believe in 2012 or 2013, the subsidy to wind through renewable energy was $167 million. But because that wind was on the grid, the effect on pricing actually saved consumers $170 million. So the savings to consumers was actually more than the subsidy that we were giving to it. So this is a tremendous one thing we need to talk about with the economic benefits as well is with solar, with energy efficiency, and some effects with winds. This is really a statewide job creator, because with efficiency, you're looking at turning every single home in the state of Illinois into a power source, basically. And you can't export that to China. You have to do it here, and you have to have those jobs here to be able to accomplish that. And with solar as well, with distributed generation and decentralizing our grid, those jobs have to be here. And I think that especially has had the biggest support among Republicans, among moderates. It's really been a very effective and true message.
Rick Knight with the Citizens Climate Lobby. Your group is suggesting legislation creating a fee on fossil fuels and a resulting dividend to homeowners. How does this work to reduce carbon and address global warming?
Okay, well, we think this is the best way to harness a cooperative effort between government and industry, and it is an economy-wide national policy. We foresee a fee on fossil fuels based on their carbon content upstream, say at the mine, the wellhead, or the port of entry for imported fuels. And all that money is put into a fund and then returned to households on an equal per capita basis. And what this does is it creates an economic price signal that says fossil fuels are getting more expensive and they're going to continue to get more expensive. Businesses and consumers will start to respond. And this will cover every form of energy and every sector in the economy. We have had a study done by a company called Regional Economic Models Incorporated on what the long-term effect will this will have on the economy. In 20 years, we would reduce emissions by 52% while growing jobs to the tune of 2.8 million over what would have happened if we did nothing. So it is both good for the economy and good for the climate.
Why a fee and dividend system and not just a tax on fossil fuels?
Well, because a carbon tax, as many people have pointed out, without returning money to households, is regressive because low-income families do spend a larger percentage of their income on energy. However, the dollar amount is much smaller than those wealthy households. And we've had a consultant do a household impact study and shown that on the average, the lower quintile, the lowest 20% nationwide, will actually see their annual income increase by a couple percent, while the hit on high income families in the top quintile is only about a quarter percent of their income. So essentially, it's transferring money from those who use a lot of energy to those who don't. And it's behavior dependent. So those are for the average households. In response, anybody of any income level can change their behavior to take advantage of the policy.
And the economic benefit of the dividend? What will that do to the economy?
Well, the economic benefits of the dividend, it puts more money into the economy that people can spend any way they want. So as we've seen with auto sales versus gasoline prices, as soon as gasoline prices drop, the sales of hybrids and EVs has plummeted, and sales of big SUVs has gone up. So people do respond to those price signals in both directions. So people will make the decision whether they want to continue burning fossil fuels, use that money to pay for it, or make more climate-friendly decisions on their own.
Let's wrap things up here by going back to Dr. Jim Angel with the Illinois Water Survey, and he's the state climatologist. What worries you most about the future changes in Illinois' climate? There's a chart focusing on tornadoes at your website and the frequency of those severe storms.
Yes, yes. I think probably the thing that concerns me the most are not the things that we know right now. It's the surprises that we're going to get in the future. So right now, you know, we've had experience with increase in temperatures and precipitation and what that means. But what about the future, and you know, what kind of things are going to play out there? So are we going to have more droughts? Are we going to have more flooding? Are we going to melt the ice sheets and cause significant rise in the coastal areas on the ocean level? So there's a lot of things that are going to be surprises, and it may not always be pleasant surprises. And one specific example right now is that we've had a stretch now of a couple of mild winters with very warm Marches. And that's great because everything comes out, looks beautiful outside, and then we get hammered by frost in April. So sometimes these things have these kind of 1-2 combos that actually can cause more damage than if it had just stayed cold this winter and things progressed in a normal manner.
Okay, Jim Angel, with he's the state climatologist. And thanks to all of the panelists for participating in this Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo Climate Change Panel. Also thanks to Michael Brown, the Executive Director of the Ecology Action Center, Illinois Wesleyan University Director of Wellness, Jeremy Spencer, Travis Metters, WGLT Operations Director, and the engineer for today's edition of the show. You can find this and past edition of Sound Ideas at WGLT.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast, or you can find the Sound Ideas podcast at iTunes. I'm Mike McCurdy. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal News and Ideas.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams, committed to helping you find the right match. Buying or selling your home can be easy. More information at jacksguarantee.com. This is GLT.